Welcome to Historically St. Pete, a weekly conversation where we explore the truths and the myths of the people and events that created the Sunshine City. My name is Rui Frias, and I have the best job in town. I'm the executive director of the St. Petersburg Museum of History. Located on the St. Pete Pier, the museum has been sharing the stories of the Sunshine City for 102 years, and we're happy to share those stories with you here on Historically St. Pete. The late godfather of soul, James Brown, who actually played the Manhattan Casino back in the day, sang in 1966, "It's a man's man's world," but maybe not so much here in the Sunshine City. Today, we're going to look at the roles women played in the history of the growth of our city. Our guest today is Jesse Breckenridge. Jesse is the Archives and Collections Manager for the Museum of History and curated one of the museum's most popular exhibits, Meddling, the Women Who Built St. Pete. Welcome, Jesse.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
So somewhere between preserving and protecting our city's rich history and helping hundreds of residents and researchers discover treasures in our archives, Jesse found the time to curate Meddling, and while doing so, uncovered quite a bit of untold St. Pete history. How did this exhibit happen?
Well, it started as a bet. We were having a couple of beers at the end of the night, me and Rui, and I said that I bet that I could find one woman for every day of the month of March, which is Women's History Month, find one woman every day to post a profile of her on our social media account, which of course meant I had to research that woman and write the profile and find a photo. And you know what? I won. So you owe me a coffee.
Listen, I'm really happy that I lost that bet because the exhibit is fantastic. And actually, the history that you discovered researching for that exhibit makes it all the more valuable. So, because there were men like, you know, in our history books, there were guys like Perry Snell and Walter Fuller and William Straub. I mean, these are the names that you hear about building St. Petersburg. Why were the women in our city's history left out?
I think that it's a couple of things. I think, of course, there's going to be a willful exclusion. And I think more often than not, what it is a systematic indifference to the stories and activities and achievements of women. You mentioned William Straub. For every William Straub, there's a Flora Wiley. You mentioned Walter Fuller. His wife, Eve Alsman Fuller, she was the state director of the Florida Art Project during the time of WPA. And she was the state chair for the Florida League of Women Voters. That stuff is significant, but it is largely forgotten. And we don't always get an answer to why things like that happen. But it is easy to see in newspapers how often things are relegated to social pages or women's pages, and it makes them a lot easier to ignore. And of course, you have to wade through the journalistic convention of not listing a woman's first name, only Mrs. Husband's last name. I was finding these in obituaries. Sometimes I would have to just do genealogical research to find out what a woman's first name was.
That's unbelievable that actually happened like that. But and you think back, like, some of our pioneering women, right? Because you back in the day, you read stories, you see photographs, you know, of the pioneering men who, you know, build towns and came here in the mid-1800s. But tell us about some of the pioneering women. Who were they? What kind of lives did they live here in St. Pete?
Well, you know that saying about Ginger Rogers and Fred Astaire, she did everything Fred did, but backwards and in heels? It's kind of like that, except a corset and a long skirt. These women were working. The early Pinellas County was very largely untamed, and women were participating in the farming and the hard work. They were getting their hands dirty. We talk a lot about John Bethel because he was St. Pete's first historian. His wife, Sarah Bethel, she arrived here at the same time he did, and she is credited with being not the first, but the second postmistress, and that's only because her daughter, Mary, was the first postmistress. And Sarah was the postmistress up until they built the first post office in St. Petersburg. And similarly, Ella Ward was a little closer to downtown. She was also a postmistress and was the reason that for a little while there, St. Pete was known as Wardsville.
In reading some of your research that you've uncovered. It was shocking, I think, to a lot of us about the number of professional women that were in St. Petersburg in the city's early days. I mean, when you talk about doctors and lawyers, business owners, I mean, automatically you go to modern history, right, for American women, you know, post-1950s. Were our women way ahead of their time?
I mean, I think so. I have this map that I look at a lot in the archives of the museum that shows the first property owners of plots of land, the earliest ones in modern history. And I would say probably about 30 to 50% of those names are women's names. It was not uncommon to see women not just owning property and subdividing land, as you can see in the case of, say, Sarah Williams or Mary Wheeler Eaton, but also operating hotels, running businesses. One of the first doctors that we have in St. Petersburg is Dr. Mary Davis. And of course, this is a tradition that continued for until today. I would be remiss not to mention Dr. Johnny Ruth Clark, who is the first African-American person to receive a doctorate from a public university in Florida in 1966. And I mentioned Eve Fuller. She was a real estate journalist. And, you know, just the women were involved in every single part of life. And they weren't just taking a back seat. They were in charge.
How about the birth of St. Petersburg itself? I mean, from the railroad arriving in 1888 to the city name, to the layout of the city, all of this keeps pointing to one woman.
Ah, Sarah Armistead. I should say Sarah Williams Armistead. She was the wife of John C. Williams, who is noted as one of two founders of the city of St. Pete between John Williams and Peter Demenz. It should be noted, was Canadian, got along with the emissary of the Orange Belt Railroad, Henry Sweetapple, very well, and is in newspaper articles from that time credited with greasing the wheels of the deal between the Orange Belt Railroad and John Williams. And after John Williams died, she took on a bunch of his land, a bunch of his property, and was responsible for strategically gifting that land to the city, or subdividing it and selling it. And she lived a crazy life before and after, and would go on to marry a former mayor, Captain Armistead, and was just a very interesting person that I'm still researching. And
I'm not gonna be a spoiler here, because there's some other amazing things on Sarah Williams Armistead that's coming down the road. But give us just a taste of this. This woman lived quite a life.
So before she even met John Williams, she I have this joke that her name is actually Sarah Craven Judge Williams Armistead, because before she met John Williams, she worked in the circus with her former husband, John Judge. And then once she was done with that, John Judge died, and she would go on to her son from this first marriage would work for John Williams, who was married to somebody else at the time, and theoretically they met, John Williams and Sarah, then Sarah Judge, and then John Williams had a very messy divorce and comes out of it with a new wife.
Well, so, you know, this is typically St. Pete, right? Because she went from, you know, working in a circus to becoming a mother of St. Petersburg, so that's that fits perfectly. Although individual women, you've mentioned a number of them, I mean, they accomplished amazing feats here in St. Pete from its early days of Sarah Bethel and, of course, Sarah Williams Armistead. Collectively, the women had steered the path of the city through these early women's clubs that were much, much more than just meeting for afternoon tea. What role did they play?
So I feel like it's important to acknowledge in general, the role that women's clubs play throughout history, which is that this is an opportunity for women to get together and acknowledge, hey, we have similar opinions, we have similar struggles, here's what we want to do about it. And in St. Pete, the earliest women's club that we always talk about in St. Pete was the Women's Town Improvement Association. And this was a collection of women who had arrived here after hearing that St. Pete was this health oasis. And they get here, and sure, they can go to the beach, or they can go to lunch or something like that, but they want to live here. And one of the things that makes that difficult is that there is no place to publicly gather. The Williams Park, or City Park as it was known then, was laid out already in the platting of the city, but it was uninhabitable. There were wild pigs running through it, and it was scary and dark and not a good place to go. So they got together and they raised money for the rehabilitation of Williams Park. And it worked. And they had money left over. So they said, okay, so what else can we do? And they started on these campaigns of making St. Pete a city worth living in. Beautification projects, putting in the city's first sidewalks, putting in public benches, not green benches yet, but just public benches. They were responsible for the upkeep of the public restroom. Things like this that would make it, like I said, not just a city that you live in, but a city that you want to live in.
What about the organizations that the African American women belong to in St. Pete?
So this is actually something that I am interested in researching further, because I have found evidence of a bunch of clubs from African American women covering a bunch of different subjects. And in, I believe it was 1939, the City Federation of Colored Women's Clubs got together and was able to federate these clubs, bring them together under an umbrella so that each of them got resources and exposure and publicity, and that the city's Black community was getting the same kind of support that it was in other areas.
Well, that kind of leads us to women's suffrage. I mean, we've seen, you know, all through growing up through history classes, right? We've seen the photos of marches and protests that mostly took place up north. But that happened here in St. Pete as well. I know we were part of the marker that was placed on Central Avenue a year or so ago. So this is kind of a two-part question here. So tell us about the struggle for the women's right to vote here in Florida and in St. Pete. But on the other side of that, how did it affect civil rights?
So conversations about women's suffrage in St. Pete start happening around the formation of the St. Pete Women's Club. I mentioned the WTIA earlier, the Women's Town Improvement Association. The St. Pete Women's Club was more focused on social issues, and they held series of talks and lectures about different social issues, but one of the important ones was women's suffrage. And that would sort of turn into more organized efforts to earn women the right to vote in St. Petersburg, which they did achieve in 1919, a full year before it was federally recognized. And one of the ways that they did that was by marching. They did it in the 1919 Kermesse Parade, which was launched from the Belmont Hotel. That is where the marker sits today on the National Votes for Women Trail. This hotel was owned by Catherine Bell Tippetts, who is an extraordinary woman in her own right. But she owned and operated this hotel and wanted there to be a centralized place for the suffragists to gather and join the parade. And it was ultimately a success.
And that led eventually to women winning office, right? So it's been 40 years since St. Pete has had a woman mayor. And you know, but was Corinne Freeman the political pioneer? I mean, what came before her?
Oh, no, she was not. Not give her credit, I mean, what an amazing achievement to be the city's first woman mayor. But our first woman elected official happens all the way back in 1920. Virginia Burnside, who was a big part of the push for women's suffrage in St. Pete, she becomes the first woman city council member, and like I said, first woman elected official in 1920, on one of the first ballots that women can even vote on. And she becomes a champion for the aspects of society that would have been discussed in the St. Pete Women's Club, would have been discussed she was more of a champion of social issues that were largely ignored in earlier conversations. And when she died, not only did the mayor shut down the city, but she got thank yous from multiple organizations, the St. Petersburg Museum of History included, because she helped us get our current location. But also something that I found interesting and have not been able to explore further, but she got a special shout out from the local branch of the Negro Knights of Pythias. I'm not sure how to pronounce that, but I'm not entirely sure of the connection, but I want to explore why this organization that previously to this has not been mentioned in the newspapers. The newspapers would regularly omit most things about the city's black population. Why specifically this? Why specifically now? Why specifically this woman? So those are kind of the avenues of exploration that I still want to take. But
so of all the research, and it's been amazing reading a lot of the research that you and your volunteers have uncovered on women's history here in St. Petersburg, who's your favorite? What's your favorite story?
Oh, that's a tough one. I mean, there's just a wide array. The exhibit itself contains 60 plus women.
There's got to be one. There has to be one favorite.
Well, I would say the person that got me started on this was the museum's founder, Mary Wheeler Eaton. I come from the North. I don't know much about Florida history, but prior to working here, I didn't know much about Florida history, and was amazed to learn that we are a 102-year-old organization, and on top of that, we were founded by a woman. And Mary Wheeler Eaton came down here from Chicago, said, "Hey, this town is about to explode. I want to make sure that we document that." And so she did. She put together a historical society, and we are still here today. And she is an incredibly colorful character. We have some old journals of hers and things. So,
I think that was it the Times who described her as a bit bossy?
Yes, it was supposed to be this nice write-up, and they said, "Mary Wheeler Eaton, who is vain and a little bit bossy." And I was like, all right, if that's how I'm described after I go, that sounds all right.
That's
I'll
perfect.
Take that.
I'll make sure that we describe you that way, okay? So what can listeners expect when they visit the museum and they see this this meddling exhibit and meddling? Why is it called meddling? But tell us what people can expect when they walk through it.
I'll answer your second question first, which is when we were putting this exhibit together, I kept referring back to history books, trying to either provide context or just find mentions of all of these people I kept finding. And in one of them, it refers to the Women's Town Improvement Association as the meddling women of St. Pete. And I love that.
Well, I can tell you when I sat in our board meeting and I announced to the board what the name of the next exhibit was going to be, there was a lot of looks at me like I'd lost my mind. So
it's ironic.
Yes.
I promise. We're reclaiming it. We're meddling for good. Certainly, like I said, there's 60 plus women in this exhibit, and they meddled for good. And of course, there's not, you know, these aren't perfect people by any means. We mentioned the struggle for civil rights earlier. I mean, we're talking 1900s, 1910s. These were wealthy white women, a majority of, when we're talking about the Women's Town Improvement Association, those were wealthy white women. But it is, in the exhibit, we do break down there's 60 plus profiles of these women, the good and the bad, and
even some of the modern women today, right?
Yes, we do have some modern women in there today. The story of St. Pete's women continues, and good for us.
All right. Well, Jesse, thank you so much for joining us on Historically St. Pete. Stop by the Museum of History to see Meddling, the Women Who Built St. Pete, and our other galleries of St. Pete history. The museum is located on the St. Pete Pier and is open 7 days a week. You can visit historystpete.org for more details. Thank you for listening, and join us next week on Historically St. Pete.